this morning. I know there's a lot of different stories here of mothers, of the mothers that you've had, and also how you have planned your motherhood. I mean, maybe you had a certain picture of what how you would be a mother, and those things sometimes don't turn out quite that way. But this morning, what we wanted to do is kind of pour into you. As mothers, first of all, but if you're a man in here, I know that you could walk away with some things this morning as well about what God wants to do in you. And so where I wanted to start, have you ever heard the, you might be a redneck if type thing, you know, well, I wanted to change it to, you might, this is how you know you're a mom, all right? This is how, if you ever experienced this, these things, maybe you have been a mom for a little while. If you've ever changed diapers and had to change the whole outfit in a diaper, the diaper and everything else, you might be a mom. If you've ever had to, if you ever cleaned a bathroom only to have your teenage kids go into the bathroom afterwards and destroy it, you might be a mom. If you've ever had to, if you ever poured a drink or multiple drinks and had to clean up those drinks after you poured those drinks and then almost poured, clean up those drinks after those drinks, you might be a mom. If you ever spent more time in the car than you do on your couch, you might be a mom. If you've put toys away only to find those same toys out 5 minutes later, you might be a mom. If you've ever been woken up in the middle of the night because your child is looking for a toy that they lost at 6 or 4 or 5, 3 a.m., you might be a mom. If you ever bought shoes that were like a day later destroyed by your kids because they were walking in the mud, playing in the mud, you might be a mom. If you have ever had to buy a larger calendar because you can't fit all your kids' things onto the small calendar, you might be a mom. If you've ever had to, your kid has ever come up to you at about 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock at night and said, "Hey, mom, I need this washed for tomorrow," you might be a mom. If you've ever had to clean up throw up and diarrhea in the same morning or evening or afternoon or the hour, you might be a mom. If you've ever had to wrestle through a outburst at Walmart or Target, if you've ever left a store without buying anything because of that behavior, if you've ever pretended that your kid's not your kid because of that behavior, you might be a mom. If you've ever suffered through your kid's bad choices and had to let the ramifications play out as your heart's breaking, you might be a mom. If you've ever felt like a failure because of what your kids are doing or have done, you might be a mom. You know, I could go on and on about what motherhood is like, but there's a visual I wanted you to see. As all these things are playing out, you know, as your dog's eating your kid's lunch, as you're cleaning up stuff in the house, as you're going to work trying to manage that, as you're managing schedules, as you're dealing with behavior, as you're trying to pour wisdom into your kids, as you're worrying about them as adults, as you're trying to invest in their grandkids, there's a visual that I want you to see is it's actually over in I think it's Philippians 2:17. This is Paul talking about his ministry, but I want you to picture this in a mom's mentality. But even if I'm being poured out like a drink offering on the sacrifice and service coming from your faith, I am glad and rejoice with all of you. But listen to this phrase. But even if I'm being poured out like a drink offering, a drink offering is like a total pouring out. But see, the picture is that as moms and as adults in here, as all of us are living, we pour ourselves out. And so as your kids have needs, you're going over here. As your job has a demand, you're pouring yourself out here. As you have to deal with schedules, and as you deal with tough issues, as you deal with your parenting your parents, as you're just pouring yourself out all over the place. That's what mothers do, is they pour themselves out. But here's the question this morning. What happens when the cup gets empty? What happens when the pitcher gets empty? What happens when as you're pouring out, you're looking in there and there's nothing left to pour into that next cup? It's almost like going in the refrigerator and you have three kids and you're getting the apple juice out and you look and one of your kids has only left this much and they all want it. How you have to like, they only get a sip each. But that's not how God designed parenting. That's not how God designed motherhood. You know, he wants each kid, each part of the family to receive our fullness. But the question is, how do we get a full picture? Because let me just walk you through how this plays out. You know, the stage one is really this, is like, man, I can't wait to be a mother. This is going to be so much fun. This is so great. The baby smiles at you. And maybe there's other stages that you absolutely love. There's the birthdays. There's the high points. There's the times that they want to cuddle with you. You're like, this is so great. There's the honeymoon period of everything in life. You know, there's a part where you're like, this is good. It's almost pouring back into you. You're like, this. I do this because of this. But as you're poured out and those things aren't happening as much anymore, there's another stage that you go to as you're pouring yourself out. It's when you start feeling tired. You know, you're like, if I could only get an extra hour of sleep this morning. Or maybe if I put a movie in, my husband can watch the movie while I sleep. You know, that sort of thing. My wife has never watched a whole movie. I've watched the same movie 12 times, but she hasn't seen it yet. You're worn out. Maybe you're the stage you're like, just wishing that this stage would end so you can get to the next stage. Because the next stage will be easier than this stage. Maybe there's a frustration that wells up in you. You're just feeling a little frustration, a little like angst, a little you're just like, man, I'm just this is not feeling right. Maybe there's a not fair. But maybe this is where you're starting to feel like you're not experiencing joy in life, you're surviving it. Like your joy is starting to be stolen from you. What used to be like filling, like those hugs and those times of cuddling or whatever you want to call it at your house, like your joy is gone. Let me just give you a verse over in Daniel chapter 7, verse 25. It says this. It says, this is what I have on my sheet. It says, he the devil shall speak against the Most High and wear down the holy ones of the Most High. Another translation says this, he will wear out the saints. There's a part of what the devil's trying to do. He's trying to wear mothers out. He's trying to wear people out. He's trying to cut them down. And then he's like, I want you to keep pouring. I want you to keep pouring. I want you to keep going. But eventually you'll run dry and you'll lose your joy for life. But that's not where it stops. That's only one stage. See, there's a stage. After you get down to the drops, and there's nothing left, you enter a whole different stage, which is really like almost an emptiness. You ever feel like you want to escape and not come back? Where all you think about all the time is sleep? Where you are angry with somebody, maybe your husband, all the time because they don't do enough? Or maybe it's just, you just feel alone. And there's a point of view that's like, there's part of me that's okay with it. I don't really want to do relationship with anybody right now. And then eventually it leads to depression, living in darkness, and really a whole empty feeling of life. And Jesus says he came that you may have life and have it to the full. If you want to look at the picture, Jesus says, I've come that your pitcher may overflow. He came not so that you'd feel empty and joyless. He came so that you'd have full of joy in life and full of life and full of delight and like wanting to pour out. And so the question becomes, how do we handle when our cup is getting empty? You know, adrenaline only goes so far. You can only live out. You know what really adrenaline does? Adrenaline kicks in when you need it most. Then it leaves you emptier than when you started. And so you can live on adrenaline, but I'm just going to tell you, eventually it's going to come to an end and you're going to feel worse than when you started. So the goal this morning is to tell you or help you figure out how do you fill you. And so I'm going to tell you, there's a story over in Mark chapter, I think it's 10, verses 38 and 42. It's about these two ladies. And I'm going to just walk you through the story. This is where it starts. As Jesus and his disciples were on their way, they were traveling from town to town, and they were coming to this village. There was a woman named Martha who opened her home to him. So just picture this. There's this lady named Martha, good lady, and she's like, man, Jesus is coming to town. This isn't a once-in-a-lifetime experience. This is a once-in-a-world-time experience. Like, no, how often do you get to have God in your home? All right, so this is that kind of setting. Like, man, Jesus is coming through. I have a gift for hospitality. I'm going to invite Jesus into my home. We're going to have a big party for Jesus. All his disciples, his followers, a bunch of other people. And when she says yes to this, in her mind, she's like, this is going to be great. This is going to be so much fun. I can't wait to have Jesus and have all these people in my house because this is what I'm good at. Verse 39 says this. Do you see this phrase? She had a sister called Mary. Do you even feel the tension already, Bill, then? She's excited about this event, but then she's like, There's a sister who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. Okay, just picture Martha. She's getting ready for Jesus to come, and so she has to, like, clean the house. She has to vacuum, make sure all the lines are going the same direction because she didn't want it to turn in a different direction. She had to wash the dishes before they ate on the dishes because they haven't used those dishes. This is the Jesus plates, right? And so you don't use the normal plates for Jesus. You use the best plates. Maybe you may only use these plates once, but these are the Jesus plates. And because it's Jesus is coming, you have to wash the dishes before you use the dishes. You have to plan. She has her list of things that she needs to do. The casserole has to go in the oven at a certain time. She's making her best casserole. She has it marked down of how many servings per person that she has. She's like making the drinks. Like, what are we going to have to drink? She has the lineup of she has place cards. She has the centerpieces. She has like the tablecloths. She has the chairs in the right spot. She has Jesus sitting in the right spot. She has all the details working on for a long time. Like, she is pouring herself out on this event. She's like so excited, but she's also wearing down because there's so many details on what to do. But then there's her sister Mary, who's doing nothing, and she's doing everything by herself. And finally, Jesus comes, and Mary's like, or Martha's like, okay, Jesus is here. You know, let me change direction a little bit. You know, doesn't that sound like a wedding sometimes? Like, you have to get the flowers, you have to get the photographer, you have to figure out how many people are in your wedding party, who's going to be offended if you don't put them in your wedding party, do I have to add, because obviously who you're marrying doesn't have as many friends as you have, so they have to find somebody, like the pastor, where is he going to stand, where are we going to have the reception, where are we going to eat at the reception, and you're starting to run all these details down. How do the cards look, who's going to sit next to each other because you don't want this person to sit next to this person, and you're running all the details out. But I always tell the bride, especially on the day that the wedding comes, don't get wrapped up in the details on that day, because what can happen very easily is it can steal your joy, right? If you're worried about as you're walking up the aisle, you're like, those flowers in the wrong place. Man, I can't believe my mother-in-law did that. She messes everything up. I give her one job only. She can't even put the flowers in the right. Did he not zip his zipper this time? He's my future husband. Can he just get ready once? You get wrapped up in the deed, and all of a sudden, what should be the most joyous occasion of your life now becomes a frustration because you're all distracted by all the details. This is Martha. In fact, verse 39 or 40 says this. But Martha was distracted. Okay, you know what that means, right? It means like when you're in the car and you're supposed to be paying attention, you're on your phone, that's distraction. It's called distracted driving. She's distracted. There is something important going on, and her eyes are diverted from that by all the preparations that had to be made. All the things that she had to pour her life into. Putting in the crock pot, start plugging in. I guess you're not allowed to have crock pots after that show, This Is Us. So throughout the... you know, cooking in the stove, all the things that you needed to do. And she was distracted by all, she's missing the part that fills her. She's missing the joy of what's happening. Jesus is coming to her dinner. And so the meal's going on, and she's got all the details figured out, and now she has to do the work of serving, right? And so she's bringing the meals out at the right time, serving drinks, and you can almost see in the story how, like, she, every time that she walks through the door, she sees Mary, and you can tell that it's bothering her every time, right? She comes out with the drinks. I'm like, anybody want a drink? Except for you, Mary. You don't get anything, you know? Walking through the door. Hey, I have some things in the kitchen. Mary, anyone want to help me? Mary's still sitting there. You know, open the door. You ever do the eye contact thing? Like, can she see me? I am struggling here. I need some help. My sister, who is supposed to know me, who loves me, I mean, we've grown up together. She should know that I need help right now. And so and then she's looking around at the frustration just rises. She's looking at Peter and watching him put his drink on the table without a coaster, and she's like getting frustrated. Someone brought extra guests, and she's like, I don't have enough food for this. She's getting frustrated, and it's building and building, and finally it comes to this. She came to Jesus, good phrase, right? We're supposed to come to Jesus, but her frustration drives how she comes to Jesus. She comes to him and asks, all right, Jesus, don't you care? Don't you care? Do you not see me? Do you not see my frustration? I'm so sick of this. I'm poured out. My cup is empty. I got nothing left to give. Don't you care that I'm empty? Don't you care that there's nothing left? Don't you care that I'm walking in depression? I'm walking in loneliness. I'm isolated. I'm doing the best I can. I feel like a failure. I feel guilty that I'm not a good enough mother. I'm trying the best I can. The terrible twos are being terrible to me. I can't handle this anymore. I can't face the pressure of my kids making poor choices over again. Don't you care, Jesus? And then she goes on. Don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Do you understand what's the deal with that is? Like, there's a whole crowd around Jesus, and it gets to a point where she can't keep her mouth shut any longer. She is so angry and so frustrated, she has to call Mary out in front of everybody. Don't you care that she's done nothing and I've done everything? Jesus, tell her to help me. I've given her eyes. I've given her the opportunity. She had to be able to see that I'm struggling. Tell her to help me. Verse 41. This is Jesus' response. All right. So do you get the picture? I'm guessing that she's empty. She's feeling like she has nothing left to give. She's not. There's no joy in this event anymore. She probably wished she would have never said yes. To having Jesus to her house. Do you get that? Like, Jesus in your house, and she doesn't even want to do that anymore. And Jesus, like, the Lord's like, Martha, Martha. You have to get the twice. Martha, 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 Martha. You may want to look to the person next to you. Don't do it now, but later on in the day, as your wife or whoever's getting ramped up, to say, don't call her by her, it's like, don't call her by her name, call her Martha. All right, you ever do that with your wife when they're acting like their mom? You're like, all right, you know, I can't say too much because Joyce is here, so I'll leave it at that. The Lord answered, you are worried and upset. That's an obvious statement. You're stressed out about how everyone perceives you. You're worried how this event's going to turn out. You're worried about this, that, and the other thing. You are worried. You are upset. You're angry. That's what it says. About many things. You're not really worried. It's not Mary's the one you're taking it out on, but it's way past that. You're worried, upset about a lot of things. There's a lot of things happening. You're worried, upset about a lot of different things. There's a lot of cups you're trying to fill. I know you're running on empty. You're worried and upset about many things. Stop just looking at Mary. It's not Mary's fault that you are where you are. You're on E, and things got to change. And so this is what they said. But few things are needed. So let's just simplify. All right? Forget the placemats. Forget the, but then he goes on a little further. Okay, let's go even simpler. Few things are needed. Actually, just one. Mary has chosen what is better. Mary has chosen to fill her cup. Mary has chosen to listen to me while I'm here. Mary, all those things are, the dish in the oven is good. The drinks are good. The service is good. The hospitality is good. All these things are good, but there's something better. All the things that you do for your kids are good. All the ways you're being poured out are good. You don't stop doing those things. All those things are good, but there's one thing that's better. Come to me so that I can fill you up. Stop being distracted by all these other things and look at the main thing, that you're running on empty because you're not coming to me. Mary has chosen what is better. Listen. We like to play victim. Especially when we're feeling like Martha. We're like, oh, that person did this, this person did. We like to play the victim role. Like, it's everybody else's fault, and I'm stuck here. Listen to what he says. Mary has chosen. You have chosen. You have chosen to live on E. You have chosen to pour yourself out, not fill up your cup. You have responsibility. It's not Mary's fault. It's your fault you're here. Stop living your life in chaos and start choosing what is better. Because when you choose what is better, it will not be taken away from you. Listen to what we're saying this morning. As moms are pouring themselves out in a lot of different ways, all good things. You know, I'm sure things, you have to go to work sometimes. You have to clean, do laundry sometimes. You have to get these things done. But if you are doing that without coming to Jesus to get filled up, it will lead to joyless living and survival. But if we can sit at his feet a little bit, if we can just, listen, if you can just experience what it's like not to be defined by what you do as a mother, but by be defined by his love for you, if you can be defined not by how your kids act, but by how he sees you, if you can be defined by how great he is and what he wants to do in your life, rather than be defined by all the chaos in your life, about your busy schedules and all that, if you can change your definition of you, if you can remove the guilt and the frustration, if you can start seeing your life in a whole different perspective, it changes how you live it. Mary has chosen what it's better, and it will not be taken away from her. Listen, Jesus in Matthew tells it this way, a whole different way of looking at it. I'm going to skip the very first part of this. Oh, you jumped on me. It says this, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened. That was the phrase, all you who are weary and burdened. So we're going to stop for a second. I'm going to ask you a question. I'm going to let you think about it for a second. Anyone in here ever been tired? Physically, emotionally, or spiritually? Okay, we got two. Okay, got that. Any of you have ever carried a burden that's just weighing you down? Anyone? Okay, we got about 10 of those. Okay, we're getting better. All right, listen, the rest of you, I know you didn't raise your hand, but I'm just going to guess. I'm going to look into your life and say that you are tired and you are burdened. I'm going to say this even more, that not only were you tired and burdened, there's probably a good possibility that 99.5% of the people in this room are tired and burdened right now. You're walking in this morning, and you're like, I didn't even want to, you're a mother in here, you're like, I didn't even want to go to church. I just, take the kids, let me stay in bed, and let me just veg. Let me put on Chip and Joanna and watch how she does her house and feel more guilty about how my house looks. And I want to take everything, just go. I just want to, you know, there's, all you who are weary and burdened, let me just, it's not just mothers, it's the guys in here. If you're frustrated at work, if you're carrying some burdens of relationships, if you're carrying some weights that are just like wearing you down, like stealing your joy, all you who are wearing burden, this way says, I will give you. It's a gift. It's something that he has for you. It's like Christmas morning wrapped up. I will give you rest. This is the phrase that he starts with, though. He says, this is your responsibility. This is what you're not going to be a victim in this. This is what you need to do. Come to me. Sit at my feet. Rest in me. Verse 29 says this. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. You know, we need physical rest a lot of times, but I know that there's many, many people who don't even realize that their souls are exhausted. Their souls, their emotional and heart, and you're just tired. So you will find rest for your souls. And then he says in verse 30, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. He says, listen, just I'm not asking a lot. I'm not, in fact, I want to give you something. Stop going to God and be like, I have to do this, this, and this. I wonder sometimes if we just have to start receiving what he's already wants to do. Let him do his work. The story kind of continues, okay? And so he goes through that. Come to me, all you who are weary, heavy laden, and I will give you rest. And then there's this story about the Sabbath day. Jesus does something amazing. He heals on the Sabbath. And everyone's like, you can't heal on the Sabbath. You're not even supposed to open the refrigerator on the Sabbath. You're not supposed to walk across the living room in the day. You're not supposed to open a door on the Sabbath. The Sabbath, the day of rest, was legalistic. You can't do this, but you're supposed to do this. You can't, and you're supposed to. And all of a sudden, what used to be like a freeing day now became a weight. And so Jesus is like, you don't even get the Sabbath. And then he says this verse in verse 8, for the Son of Man, talking about himself, is Lord of the Sabbath. Now, you're thinking, yeah, he's the Lord of Saturday. He's the Lord of Sunday. No. Sabbath means rest. He is the Lord. He is the King. He reigns over. He has control of this idea of rest. See, we have a lot of names for God. You know, he is all-powerful. He is all-wise. He's my provider. He's all. The Old Testament's filled with incredible names of God. But I wonder if you ever use this name, God, my rest. God, my place where I can just be, the place where I get my cup refilled. Pour into me, Jesus. The place where I can just receive from him, a place of filling. That Jesus has this gift. He says, you're not going to get it from a day. You're not going to get it from watching TV. You're not going to get it from escapism. You're not going to get it from sleeping until noon. You're not going to get it from a lot of different ways that our world thinks it can be done. There is one place. He says, I am the Lord of rest, and come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give it to you. I want to wrap up this message this way. There's a chapter in the Old Testament that I just want this to kind of be our prayer or the place that we sit as we wrap up this idea of where your pitcher is, where your cup is, and how you're maybe exhausted this morning. And you're like, okay, where do I go from here? How do I just want to sit in this chapter and let you just hear it. It's not going to be on the screen. I just want you to get in a place where you can hear God speaking through this chapter. It goes like this. The Lord is my shepherd. I lack nothing. He makes me lie down in green pasture. He leads me beside quiet water. He restores my soul. He guides me along the right paths for his namesake. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. Listen to these three words. My cup overflows. And what happens when the cup overflows? Surely your goodness and your love will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Do you get the flow? Do you get the beauty of that? Like he said, just let me be your rest. Let me be your shepherd. Let me lead you beside quiet water. Let me make you lie down in green pasture. Let me walk you through your valleys of the shadow of death. Fear no evil. Let me be there. Let me fill your cup up. And out of that flows, like, your head is anointed with oil. He's the one preparing the table. He's flipping it on Martha. Rather than Martha preparing the table, he says, I want to prepare the table for you. I want you to sit at the table. I want you to eat at the table in the presence of all the people who think that you're not. I want you to see how blessed you are. I want to anoint your head with oil. I want you to experience what it's like to be chosen and selected and valued and loved. I want your cup to overflow with abundance. I want you to know what it's like that you'll have love following you every day of your life, pursuing you. I want you to know what it feels like to have God's goodness surrounding you every day of your life. I want you to know what it's like to live in the house of God. You may be like, why would I want to live in a church? He's not talking about that. He says, I want to know what it's like to live in your presence day after day, in the beauty of what is made, in the beauty of worship, in the beauty of adoration, not just a worship service, but a place that is absolutely beautiful, that you come and you're like, man, I got met with God today. Every day. Do you know that that's what God has planned for you? Just as we sing our last song, I hope you know that some of you are in a deep depression right now, and you may not even have acknowledged it yet. You feel like you're in a cave with darkness surrounding you. You're trying to climb out, and there's a lot of things that you need to, steps you need to take, seeing a doctor and all that. But there is a Jesus who loves you too. Some of you are feeling like, man, I don't know if I can make it tomorrow. I don't know if I can. These terrible twos are terrible. These teenage years are a struggle. This worry about my kids making poor choices when they're away, I can't even, I feel stressed. I feel angst all the time. Can I just tell you that Jesus wants to fill your pitcher this morning? He wants you to be able to rest. It's not on you. You don't have to carry all the weight. God can carry it. Do you know that he loves your kids more than you do? Do you know that his plans are bigger for your kids than you have? Do you know that he's a better orchestrator than you are? And maybe there's a point where you just have to trust and rest that God has the whole picture, and you can just follow him, just stay close to him and let him lead you. I wonder where that would take us and how much more joy we would have in living each day, in each moment of life. We're gonna worship together, and let's just pray as we close out the service. Heavenly Father, I don't know where people are in this room. I imagine that there are some who are heavy and weary and heavy laden, tired, exhausted. But God, I pray that we don't necessarily look for it in television or escape or vacations, but may our primary way that we fill ourselves up is just sitting at your feet, spending time in your word, letting you speak to us, listening to worship songs, just walking with you, praying to you, seeking you in silence. May we just find time to remove all the distractions of our life, all the things that are calling our attention, calling out to us, and may we find rest in the Lord of the Sabbath. May you just pour into us. May you fill us. In Jesus' name, amen.